Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the American Israelite Newspaper Podcast. This is the Let There Be Light Podcast, and I am one of your co-hosts, Netanel Ted Deutsch. And I'm here with my other co-host,
Julie Babs Bernson-Brook, who is also representing Brook Moving. I have to give myself a mazel tov. I moved into the house last week, drove the truck up with boxes. I had a little bit of help emptying the truck, and I am completely moved into the Brook compound in Highland Park, Illinois. So bravo to me, mazel tov.
Okay, that is the most ridiculous hat I think I've ever seen in my life.
It says Brook Moving.
Where did you get that made
up? I had them made when I moved all the kids, when they moved from Columbus or Chicago to here and there, and I was driving trucks all over the place one summer.
We have a special guest here today.
Yes, Rabbi, please introduce yourself.
This is Avraham Weinrib from Congregation Zichron Eliezer, and a pleasure to be here today with both of you.
We're very honored to have you. I have a second.
So he's a very busy. He's a busy man. Busy man.
Got to keep this moving.
Yeah. Well, I have a second mazel tov I want to give.
He's taking over from my spot. I'm usually the one.
You're
that
the said, curmudgeon.
Let's keep this moving. He's taking over for let's keep it moving today.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Okay. So I have a second mazel tov. My son Daniel successfully argued his dissertation on Wednesday. The topic was hepatitis C virus vulnerability testing and prevention in Southern Appalachian, Ohio. Yeah. So we are very happy to have Daniel Brook now as a PhD.
Well, is he a PhD and MD?
He's going back to medical school this June. He goes back and finishes the last 2 years, and then he does a residency and fellowship. And by the time he's done, I'll be 6 feet under.
Okay.
So today is Thursday, Wednesday, March 30th. Yes, the paper comes out Thursday, March 31st. It is the 20th of Adar 2, 5782.
Yes, it is.
And we're still happy because it's still Adar. And our front page.
We're always happy.
Right. And our front page article is Honeymoon Israel Makes a Post-COVID Return, which was very exciting for me.
Yes,
I wanted my two kids here in Cincinnati to go on it, but unfortunately they're going to be in a wedding that weekend. But wow, it's very exciting. They're having the meeting April 5th at Cafe Alma.
Yes, yes.
And I think
You should probably point out there was another one that we're promoting, and we'll be promoting again, which was the Momentum trip.
For women.
Which, no, that's just, no, it's for everyone, I
think.
Oh,
I thought Momentum was for women.
It was from everybody. And this was through the Federation. The Federation is through the Young Adult Division, and it's run by Stephanie Swiger. And this actually began in 2015, so I think they've had a couple of them, and they stopped because of COVID, so now they're picking it back up again. They're going to go in, November, December?
They're going in November 3rd through the 13th, which is how I know my kids can't go on it, but hopefully next year. So, Rabbi, I read in your bio that you went to Israel first before starting your you went to a congregation in Chicago, West Rogers Park, where, of course, I was born. But in the meantime, and remember, everything is about me.
Yes, you see, it's all about
So, Rabbi, tell us about how many times you've been to Israel, if you were to Israel before rabbinical school, and just give us a little background on your Israel experiences.
I'll talk about Israel from now until you stop me, because I can't talk enough about it. Any chance I get to go, I'm there. I actually was there a couple weeks ago.
It's
pretty incredible. Took my son on a pre-bar mitzvah trip.
Nice.
And our custom is that we put on tefillin for the first time 30 days before the bar mitzvah. So bar mitzvah itself we're going to do here in Cincinnati, but the pre-bar mitzvah trip, the first time he was putting on tefillin, we did that in Israel. And we actually did it in the yeshiva that I learned in Israel, the Mir Yeshiva in Jerusalem.
Yep.
It was an incredible experience. Unfortunately, the head of the yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva, who was there when I was there, Rabbi Finkel, he passed away about 10 years ago. His son now is the current Rosh Yeshiva, and he actually was the one who was there, and it was an incredible experience, really, really special. But going back to the first time I was in Israel, I was 20 years old. So went there to learn in yeshiva and fell in love with the country and every part of it since then.
And the people.
And the people.
The food.
And the food.
Yeah, the food is
there. The smells. The smells are so clear there.
She's all about the smells.
Yeah. Smells and food might be on the bottom of the list. That's okay. But the place, the holiness, the connection, there's something you feel in Israel that you don't feel anywhere else in the world. And as you get closer and closer to the Western Wall, you feel it even more.
Right.
And at the Western Wall itself, there's something incredible about that. The connection you feel to God, it's tangible. It's really tangible.
What
really
I find when I'm in Israel
is
I think about who else has walked in the same steps that I've walked in, and I think about all the people that have come before me that have put their foot where I put my foot. I mean, I think about that at a lot of historical sites, but it really, it's almost like it comes up from your soles of your feet into the soles of your body while you're there. And as one, you know, rabbi, it just, it said to me, you become, there's just this bloom within you when you're there.
So the first time I went was in 98 with my first wife, and I went to the Western Wall, and I was just overwhelmed with emotion when I touched the wall and kissed the wall, and I felt that I had, like, returned after being gone for thousands of years. My soul had returned. And I came out, and then she was there, and it was just a really a moving emotional experience for me. But that was it was incredible. It was just overwhelmed by him. I couldn't express how I felt because I was just like, you know, like when you were blooming up, it was like inside. It was like blooming up inside of me.
Well, Rabbi Sissy Korin of blessed memory said to me one day, "When you go to Israel, it's like you're rejuvenated. You know, you're rejuvenated. Okay. It's this bloom. It's a feeling of a bloom."
Yes.
And speaking of Reform rabbis, page 3, we have a quick article about the Founders Day at HUC. Please read that on your own.
Yep.
And then, of course, we have the local community calendar. And there's a, remember, our purple spots are a bicentennial.
I want to say something on page 3, and that is I need to, there's some tough stuff that's in there. I didn't write the article. I have to take responsibility for the person that wrote it. I would not have agreed with putting some of those items in the paper because there are a number of us working behind the scenes to see that HUC does remain here.
Oh, it's a treasure here.
We need to keep them here.
It's a treasure to Cincinnati. It's very important not only to have the archives here, but to have...
Well, that'll remain. And the library.
And the museum, but also the people. The people bring a high level of education and understanding of Judaism that's important to a large segment of our Jewish population. Okay. So we want HUC to stay. But on our local news, again.
Do you want to go to community calendar?
Page 4.
Okay.
Community calendar. The purple events are our bicentennial events. I'm especially interested in the one in evening with Fran Lebowitz. I know that last week you guys struggled with who was Fran Lebowitz. So if you want to think of it, she is an influencer.
Okay. I was thinking, was that Annie Lebowitz?
Which is the photographer.
Right. Are they related? Or
I don't believe so. Okay. But Fran Lebowitz was a girl who grew up in New York, a young woman. She grew up in New York. She just was not a great student. She raised in a Jewish family, but not a great student. And she did not get to college, but she started writing to make money on the side. And she was what you would call today, she'd probably be in today's day, a TikTok star, an influencer. Okay. But she wrote articles, and she has a lot of opinions, and her opinions are well-respected. Now, she's been in a funk for a while. She's had writer block for like 10 years. And so what she does now instead is she does conversations, which is what this is, an evening. She goes around the country talking about her opinion.
So that's like next week.
That is April 12th, Tuesday evening. It's at the Aronoff Center for the Arts. It looks very good. The other thing is the Playhouse in the Park has Becoming Ruth, which I think looks pretty darn good. And there's Jews and Music on Sunday, April 24th at CCM.
We ran all of April mostly because we had to fill that page. But so that will shrink as we go along through the next couple weeks.
So.
What happened to Pesach? Pesach's not on the calendar.
Exactly. We forgot Pesach. When is Pesach is coming up?
It's April 15th. It's Friday evening. It's a Friday evening as well as a holiday. It's a hug. So, you know, what is difference when you have Passover on a Friday evening versus Passover on another evening?
That's a great question. You know, it's really a combination of two things coming together, which are two incredibly special days. Both Shabbos and Passover.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as the technical differences, very few technical differences in terms of the way it's performed and the way it's done. But, you know, one of the ideas of Passover is it's not just a commemoration of the Jews leaving Egypt. It's also a commemoration of God's rulership over the world. And that's what Shabbos is. Shabbos is all about us remembering that God created the world. So when these two days come together, it's really two concepts which are both so fundamental to who we are, what we stand for. So makes it that much more special. And one of my favorite holidays, it's hard to say favorite because every one of them is so special in its own way, but I love Passover. The Seder is something which we go to about 2:30 in the morning, usually 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's something which we can't get enough of, the kids and the family and everyone together.
You have to get up at like six to go to the services.
No, we make the service a little later the next day. We actually start at 9. Yeah. Big push. Push from 8:45 to 9.
You need some sleep.
But no, sleep is not in the cards. Certainly not on Passover the first days, because you can't sleep. Who's going to sleep when such special things going on? Kids are waiting for it. We actually have a great custom. We do on the day before Passover, we want the kids to nap. So, you know bazooka gums? Mm-hmm. Familiar with that? So we have what we call bazooka naps. For every hour you sleep on Passover, you get a bazooka. So I have kids who slept 4 or 5 hours, and incredible. They get 4 or 5 bazookas, and amazing. And they'll stay up.
That's a clever trick.
Yeah, well, it works. And I made sure I was just in East Coast last week and made sure to pick up a couple of packages of bazookas.
Yeah.
And we're ready.
You're ready for those bazooka names. So on page 5 is actually our article, Conversations with a Rabbi, written by David Esparza. It's a picture of you. So
yes, it is. It's a fine picture,
too. You grew up in Brooklyn.
It's actually a picture from my daughter's wedding.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So you grew up in Brooklyn.
Right.
And then you went to yeshiva in Israel. Uh-huh. And you ended up in Chicago. And now 10 years ago, you ended up here at Cincinnati at Congregation CZE. How did you become, what was the impetus? I mean, you can go to Jewish schools. What was the impetus to actually become a rabbi, a congregational rabbi? What prompted you? What was in your life growing up?
Inspiration.
What was
That's a great question. I actually had a grandfather who was a big inspiration to me. He was a rabbi in the Bronx in New York for 33 years. Spent many, many holidays there and Shabbosim, and saw the impact that he made. And he touched people's lives in an incredible way, one person at a time. He had a nice-sized congregation, but he had the special individual touch, which I used to just remember as a kid,
right?
Just watching and seeing him and taking it as something special. And then his son, actually my uncle, also became a rabbi, a congregational rabbi, also in Brooklyn. And someone I was, both of them I was very close to, and two of them were very, very big figures in my life.
Okay.
People I looked up to just said, you know what, if I can have the ability to affect people in the way they did, something I would love to be able to connect to. And the truth is that, you know, people call it a job. It's not a job. Mm. It's a passion. Something which you got to love, and love people, love the Torah, and want to be able to put those two together.
Mm. It's a vocation. And
yeah, so, you know, I won't say this maybe too loud, but
right.
I get paid for this. I really should pay them. I should pay the congregation to be able to have the opportunity to be able to.
Well, connect, it's out now because we quite a few people listen
public?
To this.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you got to cut that, but it's okay.
So, how many siblings do you have, and did anyone else become a rabbi other than, we know already, your uncle and your grandfather?
So I have 10 siblings. I have one. My siblings is actually a congregational rabbi in New Jersey. Mm. But many of them are rabbis in their own ways. I have ones ahead of a school, and some of them are teaching in different yeshivot and learning in yeshivot, studying. So everyone's involved in their own way, connected in a real way, and really very much something which runs through the family, the ability to inspire people. You know, my dad is not a congregational, he's an ordained rabbi, he's not a congregational rabbi.
Right.
He's actually an artist. He's a Judaic artist, and he inspires people through his work.
Wow.
His art. He has this, all his art is based around Torah projects, and has a chumash which he illustrated. He has a Pirkei Avot, many, many incredible works.
And his name is?
Rabbi Yonah Weinrib, Y-O-N-A-H. And everything he does is to use art to connect the Torah and people to God. That's really what he does.
Amazing.
So we can, you know, it's not necessarily being a congregational rabbi that to inspire people. You can inspire with everyone, everything you're doing.
Correct.
You guys probably do that as well.
We do. We try.
We hope to. We hope to. Okay.
So is he a painter or a watercolors pencils? What kind of art? Would he have a show?
He does everything. He does everything. All different types of means of instruments. I can't even name all of them.
Okay.
One of the coolest things he does is he actually uses on some things gold leaf. He actually can paint with 18 karat.
Well, that's what Clem did. Clem did that.
He used that in different projects. Really fascinating stuff. And everything he does is just bringing the Torah alive. The Torah is so rich and so alive. And you can bring it through art in a way that nothing else can. Because art
really
it depicts it in a way which is so special. And one of his biggest, earliest projects was on Pirkei Avot. And he brought the whole Pirkei Avot alive.
Wonderful.
Concepts and
I'm
going
to look him up and look up his artwork.
Would he have a show?
He's had many shows across the country, including Cincinnati.
Okay.
I didn't know. I'd like to go. My mom was an artist.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Look, he has a website.
Okay.
JudaicaIlluminations.com.
Okay.
Judaica, one word. Yeah. And you can check up some of his things on there. And it's not a shameless plug for his things.
No, not at all.
I love that kind of
art. But you can check, his stuff is beautiful.
I haven't put them up yet. I've been procrastinating, but those are the Hadassah windows.
Oh, yeah.
By Chagall. Cool. They're turned around now, but they're sitting there. I have to, just going to put them up on the walls all the way around.
That'd be beautiful. Art is a big part of Ted's life.
Check them out.
At the other office downtown.
Rabbi, so the article that was written by David concentrates a lot on being a rabbi in modern times, worship in the time of COVID, cultural divisions, and also being a rabbi in the community during the digital age.
Right.
I found it was very interesting that you still use a flip phone and that you're not on any kind of social media. So how do you reach out to your congregation if you want something important to say other than when you're at each Shabbat and you're giving a sermon or you're at your daily prayers?
So we use email extensively.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a big mode of communication. And I actually write an article every week in our newsletter, which I find...
Right. I read that.
You read that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, good.
I read every one of them.
I didn't hear feedback on that. What do you think
of
that?
You want some feedback?
I love feedback. I always enjoy feedback.
Okay.
But I haven't loved writing. It's a real pressure, as you guys probably know.
You have to be in the mode.
Yeah.
In the groove. The
you mentioned groove someone, writer's block for 10 years. That's I guess people can get that as well. But so we have... A lot of ways of communicating, which are social media has its place and has its function. But again, like I mentioned here in the article, it can be certainly distracting. And, I see people who just...
Yeah, you fall into the rabbit hole.
Exactly.
You fall into the rabbit hole.
Well, sometimes once you get past like that first sentence and it kind of starts flowing. I write too, but it's I have to like, what do I want to say? And, you know what I mean?
Your focus of your writing.
Yeah, you have to just start writing it.
Right. So, Rabbi, you have 11 children. I want you to know that Rabbi Isaac Meir Weiss has beat you. If you want to catch up, he's had 14, so you would need 15 in order to beat Rabbi Isaac Meir Weiss, who is the founder.
It's not a competition.
No, it's not.
So he's the founder of the American Israelite, along with HUC, and organized the Union of American Hebrew Congregations. So tell us about your 11 children. I know you just told us the two of your daughters are married and one's in Israel and one's going to Israel.
Right.
What about your other children? Where are they located? And
so first of all, thank God we have 11 children. Sounds like a big number.
That's wonderful.
I have 11 only children.
God bless your wife.
Each one's really, she's the most amazing thing in the whole world. And this really should be about her because I can talk about her also until you stop me.
Go ahead.
But she's incredible. She's really everything that I and our family has accomplished is because of her. She's an incredible, incredible power and... We actually had this 10-year anniversary dinner.
Right. That was just about a month ago.
Right. I did something there which, she may not have appreciated, but it was something which really I think was important to do. We gave her a standing ovation. I said, this is really all about her.
And
the whole congregation stood up, gave her a standing ovation.
Wonderful.
So it was very special.
She's
really, besides raising our children, each one in an incredible way, but she's involved so much in the community and the congregation. She's always making meals for people and always helping people and doing things. Probably don't know even all the things that she does. She just keeps on going. She's unstoppable. And back to our children. Each one's an only child. I was raised, actually, from a family of 11. I'm the oldest of 11 children.
Okay.
And 10 of us are married. I have one single brother who's just coming back from Israel now. And my parents really had that ability to raise each of us as an only child, which is, it's hard to even believe it, but it's really, you had to be there and had to experience it to really see it, each one of us. And that's the, what we try to do.
It's like your model, your focus.
Yeah. My mom unfortunately passed away about 10 years ago, but, she lives with us in our memories every single day.
Right.
But my parents are very much our role models for what it means to be a parent and take every child and treat them as an only child and do your best and... Thank God we're trying to do that. So in terms of our children, so two of them are married, right, as you mentioned, the older two daughters. I have a son who's learning in New Jersey. yeshiva there. My fourth is in Israel, actually, in studying in seminary. She's coming back, actually, next week for Passover, then go back afterwards. And below her, the rest are all here in Cincinnati. In Cincinnati, both at Hebrew Day School and Atara Girls High School.
Okay.
Doing incredibly well and love Cincinnati. So it's good to have some of them still in the house.
Special kind of town.
Yeah, special kind of town. Special kind of children. So.
And tell us the etymology of the congregation's name, Zicharon Eliezer.
Yeah, so Zicharon means memory. Eliezer is after Rabbi Eliezer Silver. Right. So it's interesting. The congregation used to be called KI.
Right.
Knesset
right.
Israel for right. many, many years. I don't know, it was founded like over 100
years
ago. No, maybe 100. Okay. Yeah, okay. It was a little over 100 years ago.
All right.
And when the congregation moved to its current location on Section Road, the property was actually bought by Knesset Israel KI. It's owned by KI. And the property actually has two buildings on it. One's the congregation, one's the mikvah.
Right.
And from a legal zoning perspective, they couldn't keep the name of the congregation as the same one who owned the property. I don't know all the details of that, but they had to change the name. Right. And it was most fitting that Rabbi Silver has been one of the most famous Orthodox rabbis, you know, still in the last century. And he was here in Cincinnati, and he was actually the one who was the rabbi of Knesset Israel for many years. So we decided to name the shul after him. Actually, I was before my time. I wasn't even involved in that decision. I moved here shortly afterwards. But it was very fitting. We actually recently, a number of years ago, found his chair, which he actually had in his synagogue. We brought it to our synagogue. It's sitting in the front now. And every time we have a bris milah, so we actually use that. We bring it down, and the child's put on that. So it's very special to actually have a connection to him.
Beautiful. And we're actually going to talk about circumcision today in the article from Rabbi Shlomo Rishkin. Yeah, the Seder of the Week. So on page 7, I just wanted to help people along with the article. It's about a state representative named Sarah Fowler Arthur, who actually made some misconceptions, miscomments that she's had to backtrack on regarding teaching the Holocaust. She has had a lot of backlash, and mostly it's come from the state representative Casey Weinstein. So on the left is the picture of Fowler Arthur, and on the right is Casey Weinstein. I would recommend everyone read the article. Okay. So Sarah Fowler Arthur, according to James Posh of the ACLU, said that Fowler Arthur's commentary showed that she had no baseline education, which is entirely true because she was completely homeschooled and never had any formal education at all. It doesn't even look like she went to Sunday school for all I can tell. And she made some very bad choices in her choice of words. And so we will move along.
This happens all the time. People make comments, and you just have to kind of take it with a grain of salt.
I wonder what her connection to the Holocaust is personally. Probably none.
She's had no Holocaust education. She's listening to tapes now on the Holocaust after being lamb blasted.
I'm actually a grandchild of survivors. My grandparents were Auschwitz survivors.
Wow. Your mom or your dad's?
My dad's side. My dad's side. And we grew up with it. We grew up with it every single day. I actually have a picture in my living room, my dining room, of my grandfather, and he used to have this pose at every one of our family celebrations. He had a number on his arm. B2730 was his number that was put on his arm by the Nazis.
Right.
And he used to walk around by every family celebration. He used to roll up a sleeve and say, "This celebration is my revenge to the Nazis."
Oh, I love that.
So I have a picture of him, actually, with the sleeve rolled up. It was actually a year before he passed away by my sister's... My sister made a bris milah, and he was there, and that was the pose. That was what we think of him, and you know that's what we have to think of, is that every child we have, every mitzvah that we do, everything we're involved in, that's our biggest revenge to the Nazis.
And I agree.
We got to keep on doing that.
We shall. All right.
So in terms of Jewish education, on page 8, one of the two U.S. conservative rabbinical schools is slashing its tuition.
Okay.
So a lot of times, though, when rabbis go to rabbinical school, a lot of the tuition is underwritten. Is that the same in the Orthodox schools, Rabbi?
So it's interesting. You know, the yeshiva system doesn't necessarily have a rabbinical school. You study in yeshiva, and one of the paths you may take is to become a ordained rabbi.
Right.
And it will have greater focus on Jewish law and things of that nature. But there's no special actual rabbinical school, which is just for people who want to become ordained rabbis. The learning in the yeshiva, you know, yeshiva is about learning Torah. Torah is for everyone, not just for rabbis, not just for someone who wants to become a rabbi. It's for everyone. And someone who wants to go that path of becoming an ordained rabbi will just sort of focus heavily on Jewish law. There's a series of tests that we take on that. And thank God it's something which is out there, available for everyone.
So not everybody that goes to yeshiva becomes a rabbi. I mean, no, they become some of them.
Most they all become learned.
Right.
Become learned. Right. Learned right. In everything they need to know.
Right.
And those who want to focus on becoming ordained rabbi will take specific focus on Jewish right. law, take tests, et cetera, to become that level okay. of ordained.
So rather than going through each of the news stories, we're going to let you right. read those on your own. The only one that really I'm right. very excited about at this point is under Israel, the Ukrainian refugee wins the women's race at the Jerusalem Marathon.
What page are you on?
I am on page 12.
Okay.
So Valentina Vareska right. is a Ukrainian athlete, and she was actually scheduled to run the Jerusalem Marathon anyway, but she ended up in Israel early because she was one of the refugees that Israel, thank God, took in. She came with her daughter.
She just came.
She was supposed to run the marathon anyway. She was scheduled to run the marathon, okay. but she came to Israel early because of the war in the Ukraine. So, her husband was left in the Ukraine. He has to fight.
Okay, so she finished in 2 hours, 45 minutes, and 54 seconds. So what was your best time?
I didn't do a marathon. I did the triathlon. So okay. Rabbi won a number of indoor triathlons at the JCC.
She's oh, wow.
constantly yeah. showing up. She brings in her, you know.
Awards.
Awards.
Okay.
Awards. Okay.
On page 13.
Well, the war is still going on in Ukraine.
Right.
But actually.
Congratulations to the winner of that race.
Okay, well, that's fine. So in Ukraine, I think the Russians have been stopped going into Kyiv, and now they're trying to
but
negotiate.
But they've got Mariupol, and they took Mariupol now, and they've also, what they've done is they.
Kharkiv? What about that?
I don't know, but I know Mariupol, what they've done in the city is they're doing like electronic. Stuff to them. They're not letting them use the internet that the Ukrainians okay. normally. They're
They've shut down all the electronic yeah. stuff.
Yeah, and also we also should be mentioning that in Israel there's been a number of terrorist actions lately.
Yes, there have.
You know, it's becoming close to Passover, close right. to summer tourist season. This is when it always picks up at this time of the year. It's to deter people, but you know our people are never deterred.
Well, I think it was also because you've had this everything in the last news cycle for the last month. Since Russia invaded Ukraine, has always been about Ukraine.
So
and
ISIS needed some attention.
They waited until it's kind of like slowed down a little bit, and now they're doing this because they're for attention, I think. That's my opinion.
Well, I always think it's for tourist season. It's always right. starting around tourist season. On our social pages, again, right. Kathy Sakes Hollander has some beautiful weddings.
Okay.
So we have Scott and Shira Gordon Miller. Right. We have Alexa and Andrew Hill. Esther Alden and Yitzi Weiss are now engaged, and Rabbi...
I'll be at that wedding.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, okay. Next week.
Next week. So is that the Ofruf that you've got?
No, we got Ofruf. That's Yosef Wellheim, who's also okay. wedding is next week. Actually, 2 days in a row.
Nice.
We got a wedding. The Alden's wedding is on Tuesday night, and the Wellheim's wedding is on Wednesday night.
So
in New York?
So the Alden wedding is, yeah, in New York, and this in Long Island, and the Wellheim's wedding is in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
So in Israel, I know the weddings aren't always on Sunday evenings. Do we do that here in Cincinnati? Do we do weddings on other nights other than Sunday
all
night?
Days. All yeah. days, yeah. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
All of them.
All of them.
Okay.
So, and we also have Rabbi David and Lee Meisner welcome their new baby, Chaim Mordechai, to the family. So mazel tov to everyone on our social pages.
Mazel tov.
Mazel tov.
And we Beautiful. Have photo pages in the middle from 14, 15, 16.
What was this event, Melba
this
Malka?
This was at Golf Manor Synagogue. They invited in Rabbi Akiva Zweig. And so this is photos.
Big scholar.
Big scholar. So this is photos from that event at Golf Manor.
And we see YY all over the pictures.
Yes, there's YY.
Our buddy YY. And then around the community, Ignite at the Blaze. What was this event, Ted?
Same thing. It was during that same event. I think it was...
Got to read the article.
Yeah, you have to read the article. Please go to the article on page 16 and read all about it.
So on our opinion page, page 18, Danielle Minson has sent in an article.
Well, actually, it was...
right, we found it.
We had to... Actually,
we had a typo.
I want to publicly thank Julie for copy editing that letter to the editor, because if it had not been... it would have been very embarrassing for the paper, and it was misspelled.
I was wondering who David Minson was. I'm like, has her father now become the CEO? I don't even think her father's name is David. Does she have a brother? So I was, you know, when I come in on Tuesdays to pick up my paper, if you haven't sent it through, I start looking through it anyway, and I did catch that.
You did catch it, and it is now corrected, yes. And it should be corrected in the paper and online.
I found the opinion about when Zelensky gets, what Zelensky gets wrong about the Holocaust in Ukraine. I did not agree with that, okay. But I would like our listeners to read that and make their own opinions. I was not happy with this choice from this Jeffrey Wendlinger. Well,
we get all of our stuff from, actually, there's two mistakes here. And the one is there's his name is listed right there. And then it's listed at the end again, too. You don't
well, they
have
explain
to have
who he is.
Them.
Well, a lot of times at the end of these articles, they do explain who he is.
Okay. Well, you don't have to have listed twice.
Yeah. So make your own opinion.
That's fine.
Now, this week, Shabbat Shalom, Tzaria Leviticus, is the Seder of the Week from Rabbi Shlomo Riskin. I always like what Rabbi Shlomo Riskin's talking, but there is a lot about circumcision and women in this article.
So you might not agree with it.
Oh, I know. I thought it was a great, this was a great Seder. I learned a lot. I always learn a lot from Rabbi Shlomo Riskin. We will explain next week. We have a new person working on the computer doing the production. Next week, the article will look more like it typically does with three columns instead of five.
Three columns instead of five.
Yeah. So we want to clarify that.
That's fine. That's fine.
But I did really well in the questions on the test or Torah knowledge. I'm getting better and better at it.
The rabbi would probably get them all straight anyway.
I don't know. It's a good thing it has the answers here.
Well, you have to look upside down to get the answers.
All right. So moving right along to page 20.
Okay. So you'll start with the bicentennial.
Well, okay. So each week the American Israelite will print one milestone related to the history of Cincinnati Jewish community over the last 200 years. Provided by the Cincinnati Jewish Bicentennial Committee. Each milestone weaves Jewish history within the greater context of our community's development and our country at large. In 1913, Union Museum, currently the HUCJIR Skirball Museum, is founded at HUC by then-president Kaufman Kohler. Mm-hmm. To learn more about the history of Jewish Cincinnati, go to www.jewishcincy200.org.
So actually, Kaufman Kohler was a very interesting rabbi. He was born in Bavaria, and he received his training in Berlin, and later he then went to university, and he got a PhD. And his thesis was Jacob's blessing. A lot of the German rabbis at that time were not pleased with his PhD, and he was pretty much ostracized in the German community. So he came to the United States, and he became a Reform rabbi, because, you know, the Reform Rabbinate was starting now in Germany, and some of them agreed and some of them didn't. And so he came over here, and he actually went to Congregation Sinai, which is a Reform congregation in Chicago, and he ended up being the president of HUC, and that's how he started the Skirball Museum.
All right. What else you want to talk about today?
Well, at 150 years ago, Sir Moses Montefiore visits Baghdad.
Montefiore.
Yes. Montefiore. So another interesting man. So this article is about when he was 88 years old, he wanted to go to Baghdad and visit the Jews and the Persian Jews.
How many Jews were there then?
Probably a lot. There are a lot. So he wanted to visit them because he loved to travel. He went all over. He was
At
88. And so his congregation, his people, did not want him to travel. So I have to tell you, he ended up living to 100 years old in 9 months.
Oh, wow.
So Montefiore was a Italian Jew, a Sephardic. He was a banker. He was an activist, a philanthropist, as well as he was the sheriff of London. He was like 6'3" tall. He was huge.
Wow.
And he supported everything. And he was particularly supportive of the Jews in the Levant, you know, the Persian Jews.
Okay.
Very supportive of that because of his background. He had a quick wit. He's also famous for saying that he sat down at a dinner party and the man next to him was a known anti-Semite. And a man not realizing that Montefiore was Jewish said to him, you know, I just got back from Japan and there's no pigs and no Jews in Japan. So Montefiore turned to him and says, well, the next time you go, I'll go with you, and then there'll be one of each when you get to Japan, meaning that man was a pig and he was the Jew. So he was a quick wit, very well-loved. He was knighted by the queen.
Oh, really?
Wonderful, and I guess a wonderful human being. Unfortunately, he did not leave any children. He was not that they know of.
Okay.
There is some gossip about a child, but that's gossip, and Lashon Hara is not something we do.
Right.
But so very interesting man. So other than Israel, Rabbi, have you traveled to other countries?
I have. I have been to England, been to Switzerland, been to Italy.
Did you do any rabbinical work in any of these other communities, or were you there just touring?
So I like to say everything's rabbinical work.
Okay.
You got to see God in all these places. There's a famous line. There's one said by a famous rabbi, Rabbi Shamson Fowler Hirsch, that a person will come up to heaven after 120, and they're going to say, have you seen my Alps? I was going to say, you see my Alps? Because that's part of what way recognizing God is, seeing all these beautiful, beautiful places. I love nature. I mentioned that in the article. I love nature, love outdoors. And seeing the grandeur of this world is something which is very special. So you get to see God through different places. So it's all rabbinical work.
It's interesting that you say that, because I listened to a number of podcasts,
right, a
number of Jewish podcasts, and one was talking about when you feel like you may have lost your faith and you're afraid that you've lost that feeling of wonder. And they said, well, if you go outside one day and you see that the bird is singing or the tree is beautiful, you know you still got it in you. It's that, and you're just 100%. Saying the exact same thing, that that's where you find your wonderment is in those moments, and that's when you can say to yourself, you're right. No, I haven't lost it. It's all still there.
Yeah, for sure.
Under 100 years ago, there's a great article about the student body at Hebrew Union College. Love it. I think it's a great story, considering that we've got this issue now going on with HUC. And what about any of these bar mitzvahs that you know, Ted, from 50 years ago?
I would say bar mitzvah Dr. and Mrs. Harold B. Spitz are proud to announce the forthcoming bar mitzvah of their son, Mark, on Saturday, April 8th at 11 a.m. at Rockdale Temple. Mark is the grandson of Mrs. Max Spitz, the late Mr. Max Spitz, and Dr. and Mrs. Clarence Lubin. There was a Mark Spitz that was a famous
swimmer right.
In the
1970s.
70 something. Yeah. He won like 8 gold medals. Right. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Remember that guy?
He was from Indianapolis. Yeah.
Okay.
So, Rabbi, about your bar mitzvah, do you remember I'm sure you remember. I shouldn't even ask. What it was your parsha?
Korach.
Yeah.
Should I land it for you?
Yeah.
To the first passing. Vayikach Korach, Bani Yitzhar Ben Gaz, Ben Levi, Vedasam Aviram Ben Eliyahu.
And every time you get to that Torah,
he was the rebel leader, wasn't he?
He was.
And every year when you get to that portion, do you think about your daydream about your bar mitzvah?
I sure do. It was a special day.
And what is your most prominent memory? What sticks out the most when the first thought you think about your bar mitzvah?
My mother's smile.
Your mother's smile.
Yeah.
Okay.
Her smile. It was the first. You know, I was her oldest. And the first one, and the beam of joy that she radiated. That day or something, which I still remember.
You'll always remember that.
Yeah, can't forget that. Yeah.
And your bar mitzvah was in the United States. You didn't go to Israel for it?
No, it was in Brooklyn. It was in Brooklyn, United States. And it was special nonetheless.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, from 10 years ago, Julia, not me, but the other one, Julia Olson, she picked out a great article about the American Rib.
There's Julie.
Julie and Julia.
So Julie and Julia here at the Israelite.
Yeah. Confusing. But there's only one Ted.
It's not that confusing. And there is only one Ted. That's right.
There's only one Ted. Yes. But she picked out a cute article from 10 years ago about America's rabbi, you know.
He was very Shlomi hot Voltek. Back. He was very hot back then.
10 years ago.
I haven't really heard about him lately.
No, he's been very quiet.
I haven't heard from him.
He's been very quiet, but he did try. I remember when he was running for office because it was 2012. That was, you know, one of the presidential election years that I was really involved with. So I thought it was pretty interesting.
Moving right along. All right, Jews in the News.
Yeah, so Jews in the News.
They
talk about Benjamin Franklin, that there's been rumors that Benjamin Franklin was not an anti-Semite, and that's what our Nate Bloom is trying to say. Those rumors have to stop. He actually was well known for stopping in at every congregation and always making a donation.
And you know what? I listen to like CDs on tape in my car a lot. And I just listened to John Adams, who was the second president. And he was a big supporter of the Jews in Boston. And they asked him what he thought. And he said, well, Jews should be able to practice their religion and support their religion. And it's really fascinating. I like to listen to this when I'm driving around.
Yeah.
But I never knew that Peter Coyote was Jewish.
Yeah.
And that's in there. He's Jewish.
Interesting last name. I wonder if it was something else, you know.
What he comes up with in it is, I mean, you know, Steven Spielberg was, I think, born in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
And he's a famous Jewish movie director.
Producer. So in the meantime, also, there's a good article near the end about when we were bullies. I actually read about this. It was a director who realized as an adult that he had been a bully to one boy in the class.
Yeah.
And he went and he interviewed everybody that was bullying with him. And they all talked about how this guilt had stayed with them the rest of their lives.
I felt bad about it.
Yeah, so he wrote this whole show about it, a documentary. I'm looking forward to watching it. Under sports, again, I was thrilled to see that JTA did an article about Ryan Terrell becoming the first Orthodox Jew to play in the NBA. So, of course, he was with that winning team, Yeshiva University. It was on all sorts of news.
He went pro.
He's going to go pro. So he's in his fifth year. He would have been in his fifth year of college. So he was in his fifth year. But he's not going to finish. He's graduating, but he's not going to take a fifth year, which he could, to play, and he's going to go into the draft.
Oh, he's going into the NBA.
Yeah, he's going to try to. They said they're not sure of a Division III. They think that he should get to practice with the Division I and try. But, you know, everyone followed that Yeshiva University's good fortune.
They won a lot of games.
Yeah. It was even NPR had a story about them.
Well, so he's 6'7", and he's a guard.
Yeah.
Okay. Some of these, that's like the smallest guy in the team is a guard. And then you have forwards and then you have the center. And the forwards are like 6'10, 6'11. And then the center's like 7 feet. That's pretty tall.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyway, well, he actually, so the coach at Yeshiva University was Steinmetz and his own son, Jacob. So, Elliot Steinmetz actually tried to get into the draft as well, but he.
Didn't make it.
I guess he didn't make it. Yeah. So anyway, I thought it was a great article.
You can always be a walk on to a tryout. You can do a walk on.
They do all kinds of testing.
They do.
With them.
They take guys. You know, it's just like in the NFL and then in Major League Baseball.
Yeah. So Iris's article this week, I thought it was really good. So what she did is she compared her life when she wakes up in the morning and what she does with a woman in the Ukraine in Maripol, and I thought it was a great way to put things right. It's a great way to put things into perspective.
Our lives are stable and normal, and their lives are just topsy turvy.
Right,
staying alive, survival.
So, Rabbi, you said that your grandfather came out of Auschwitz. Where did your family come from? Back in Europe, or did they come from Israel directly?
From Poland.
Poland. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Both sides from Poland. My father's side and mother's side. My mother's side actually left from Slut right before the war. And they got out. And I experienced the horrors of the Nazis. But my father's side almost was totally wiped out. My grandfather was basically the only survivor of his quite large family.
May all their memories be for a blessing, really. Yes,
thank you.
That's on page 25.
Yeah, I really liked it. Okay. So on our obituaries page, we have Dr. Michael Stephen Taplitz, a beautiful article written about him.
Well, this ran last week, but we didn't have the photo, and so we reran it again with the photo.
And then Madeleine Albright, which we all know the story that she said she didn't know she was Jewish. Now, the funny thing
is... she was like 50 or
right.
So.
The funny thing is when I used to see her, I used to think she looked Jewish. I used to always thought, boy, she looks Jewish. Because she is Jewish.
Right.
You know, you can change your religion, but you'll always be Jewish, honestly. So she's passed away, and may her memory be for a blessing. So we will begin with Marvin Charles Silverman, age 87, March 29th, 2022, the 26th of Adar 2, 5782.
Laura Sue Foster Nee Juntoff, is it Juntoff?
Juntoff,
age 67. March 26, 2022, 23 Adar 2, 5782.
And her son Chase became a rabbi.
Chase
Foster through HUC.
Okay.
Eileen Hodesh, age 72, March 24th, 2022, the 21st of Adar 2, 5782.
Marilyn Kirby Nee Casper. So she was related to Jeff Casper, Casper and Casper, the attorneys. So Marilyn Kirby Nee Casper, age 71. March 21, 2022, 18 Adar 2, 5782.
May all their memories be for a blessing.
Yes. All right, so Passover's coming up. Passover greetings. Our deadline is next Friday. So if you want to get your, we're already halfway through doing laying it out. So if you want to get your ad in, please get your ad in now.
And what's your favorite, Rabbi, what's your favorite Passover food?
Passover food. I told you food's low on the list. It's low on the list. I don't focus. I mean, you know, everything my wife makes is amazing. But what should I tell you? It's not about the food.
Okay.
I like the food.
Well, I'll just tell you. I like matzah with a little margarine and honey.
I love matzah, too.
I like matzah.
I actually ordered a lot of matzah this year because we're making it our son's bar
mitzvah. Matzah brei.
Oh, okay. Good.
Oh, my mother makes the best.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Enjoy it.
I'll we'll never forget the fact that she's wearing a Brooks moving hat. You always remember that.
In case I need a mover.
If you need a mover, so 9 days
of luxury. Next time I'm at synagogue.
There's an ad on the back of page, 9 days of luxury with the one you love. So it goes through a Federation's trip to Israel, and everybody should go. If you've never been to Israel, call them, get a hold of them. You need to go to Israel. That's my recommendation.
And I love that Cafe Alma's hosting a lot of things. In fact, we're going there Saturday night at 9 o'clock. Edith Israel's having a after Shabbat event at Cafe Alma at 9 o'clock. Maybe you'll be there, Ted.
Well, we'll see. All right, so you ready for bad joke of the week?
Yes.
Okay, I've not done this one before.
Why would you say a bad joke one?
Because they're always bad.
Well, we have joke of the week. But I like to say and qualify it because it's usually a bad joke.
It doesn't have the timbre. You know, we all laugh a little bit late.
All right. So this is from the Encyclopedia of Jewish Humor from Biblical Times to the Modern Age, compiled and edited by Henry D. Spaulding. A young student prided himself on his ability to confuse the wisest of scholars. Once, when he was surrounded by friends, he sought to prove his self-asserted cleverness. So he asked the town sage, "What was the first thing Eve did when Adam came home late one night?" "She counted his ribs," said the sage promptly.
So she counted his ribs. Did he like lend a rib to somebody else? Is that what
maybe
she's...
That made it sort of implying because, you know, his rib came, she gave the rib.
So did he make another woman by giving away another rib?
He's like,
well, that way it would make him balanced.
You know, he was doing something wrong.
I mean, he was balanced that way by getting rid of another rib.
See, that's why we call it bad joke of the week. Are you ready?
Just call it bad. It wasn't a joke, just bad.
So, Rabbi, it was really an honor and pleasure to have you.
My greatest pleasure.
You know, I met you, I don't think you remember, I met you at YY's daughter's Kiddush.
Yes, yes.
You walked over.
Yes.
And that's when I learned about not eating bagels at a Kiddush and how that all works, because I'm like, we're at the bagel man's daughter's Kiddush, and where is the bagels? But, you know, Ted, if you ever have a Kiddush, you should let Ted know ahead of time, because he does Kiddush hopping on the weekend to see how much he could eat at each Kiddush.
I'm not going to admit to that.
If you don't already know
big
it.
Kiddush this week, so.
Big Kiddush this week.
Well, we
big
know where Ted's headed.
Big Kiddush this week.
Don't miss it.
Don't miss it.
It's been an honor and a pleasure, Rabbi. Okay. I hope this we haven't traumatized you too much.
Yeah, I think we have. I think he's kind of a little shell-shocked now.
Not at all. It's just a pleasure being in good company.
Thank you again for joining us.
Okay, pleasure.
And thank you for being part of our conversations with the Rabbi. We wish all of our listeners a Shavuot Tov, good week.
Well, you got to start getting clean your house. I'll be finishing up, soon enough.
And my other house is already clean. My other compound.
You don't have to clean it.
I don't have to clean it.
Get ready for Passover.
Already clean.
Okay. Thanks, everybody,
Shavua
for listening.
Bye-bye. See you next week.